Discovering stories of people living out their beliefs in our culture, communities, and the public square. And finding courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
When many think of the Christian faith, they view it as a path to heaven. But as followers of Jesus, is that the sum total of what we believe? Today we go on the road with a young man who's become a new media spokesman, racking up tens of millions of views and listens with his messages about how Jesus has changed his life and how he can transform the world. Jefferson Bethke believes that Christianity is so much more than what we've reduced it to, and he's penned a new book called It's Not What You Think, Why Christianity is So Much More Than Going to Heaven When You Die. And we warmly welcome you to the show today, Jefferson. Thanks for being with us, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
By the way, one of the coolest parts of your biography has to be the fact that you named your yellow lab Aslan. Is that a pretty fierce and wise beast right there?
Yeah, exactly. Well, what's really funny is, you know, some people will say, you know, what is that? He's not safe, but he's good, and that's how I usually know someone's a Christian, if they know that line about Aslan.
Yeah, the C.S. Lewis test is a very good test for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Jefferson, many of us came to know your name via your spoken word YouTube video, which became such a hit. It was called Why I Hate Religion But Love Jesus, and it went viral on the web a couple years ago. Now has over 30 million views. And before,
yeah, crazy.
It was crazy. And just before we fast forward to the present day, I was intrigued to read that you never really anticipated seeing the kind of visibility that the video generated. You were just a college kid with something on your heart to say, right?
Yeah, totally. So it was secondary that we even put it online. It was just a poem written for my college, and then I was just bored one weekend with my friends, so we put it on YouTube. But that was kind of just like beside the point. It was more something that I wrote for my college. Yeah, so it's crazy.
Well, before we go any further, let's just go ahead and share that original YouTube video. It's tremendous. 4 minutes long from Jefferson Bethke on YouTube. That's the name of his YouTube channel. If you just search Jefferson Bethke on YouTube.com. And the video is called Why I Hate Religion But Love Jesus.
What if I told you Jesus came to abolish religion? What if I told you voting Republican really wasn't his mission? What if I told you Republican doesn't automatically mean Christian, and just because you call some people blind doesn't automatically give you vision? I mean, if religion is so great, why has it started so many wars? Why does it build huge churches but fails to feed the poor? Tell single moms God doesn't love them if they've ever had a divorce, but in the Old Testament, God actually calls religious people whores. Religion might preach grace, but another thing they practice, tend to ridicule God's people, they did it to John the Baptist. They can't fix their problems, and so they just mask it, not realizing religion's like spraying perfume on a casket. See, the problem with religion is it never gets to the core. It's just behavior modification, like a long list of chores. Like, let's dress up the outside, make it look nice and neat. But it's funny, that's what they used to do to mummies while the corpse rots underneath. Now I ain't judging, I'm just saying, quit putting on a fake look. Because there's a problem if people only know that you're a Christian by your Facebook. I mean, in every other aspect of life, you know that logic's unworthy. It's like saying you play for the Lakers just because you bought a jersey. See, this was me too, but no one seemed to be on to me. Acting like a church kid while addicted to pornography. See, on Sunday I'd go to church, but Saturday getting faded, acting if I was simply created to just have sex and get wasted. See, I spent my whole life building this facade of neatness, but now that I know Jesus, I boast in my weakness. Because if grace is water, then the church should be an ocean. It's not a museum for good people, it's a hospital for the broken. Which means I don't have to hide my failure, I don't have to hide my sin. Because it doesn't depend on me, it depends on Him. See, because when I was God's enemy, and certainly not a fan, He looked down and said, I want that man. Which is why Jesus hated religion, and for it he called them fools. Don't you see, so much better than just following some rules? Now let me clarify. I love the church, I love the Bible, and yes, I believe in sin. But if Jesus came to your church, would they actually let him in? See, remember, he was called a glutton and a drunkard by religious men. But the Son of God never supports self-righteousness, not now, not then. Now back to the point, one thing is vital to mention, how Jesus and religion are on opposite spectrums. See, one's the work of God, but one's a man-made invention. See, one is the cure, but the other's the infection. See, because religion says do, Jesus says done. Religion says slave, Jesus says son. Religion puts you in bondage, while Jesus sets you free. Religion makes you blind, but Jesus makes you see. And that's why religion and Jesus are two different clans. Religion is man searching for God. Christianity is God searching for man. Which is why salvation is freely mine, and forgiveness is my own. Not based on my merits, but Jesus' obedience alone. Because he took the crown of thorns and the blood dripped down his face. He took what we all deserve. I guess that's why you call it grace. And while being murdered, he yelled, "Father, forgive them. They know not what they do." Because when he was dangling on that cross, he was thinking of you. And he absorbed all your sin and he buried it in the tomb, which is why I'm kneeling at the cross saying, "Come on, there's room." So for religion, no, I hate it. In fact, I literally resent it. Because when Jesus said, "It is finished," I believe he meant it.
And there it is from YouTube.com, from Jefferson Bethke's YouTube channel. It's called Why I Hate Religion But Love Jesus. Over 30 million views for that video. It's remarkable on YouTube.com. And you can find it there when you just search for Jefferson Bethke. But Jefferson, I know your life has changed in multiple myriad ways since that video came out. So just give us a bit of a thumbnail sketch about what you've been up to and how your life has changed since that video was released.
Yeah, I mean, it's been fun because it's definitely stuff I've wanted to do. But now me and my wife, we just basically use our time when it's, you know, creative stuff outside of family to really just try to get people to think about Jesus differently or kind of have aha moments of maybe they said no to Jesus. And that could be a podcast or a book or a YouTube video, but that's basically what we do now.
Well, it's tremendous. Let's talk right up front about the subtitle of your new book, Why Christianity is About So Much More Than Going to Heaven When You Die. And there's a lot of meaning there, but what is your heart for that message?
Yeah, well, I think so many times I grew up and a lot of my friends had this idea and vision of an escapist Christianity of, you know, it's about getting your soul saved and then hold on tight. Your life doesn't matter. Just wait till you get to heaven when you die. So your life's kind of more like a placeholder after you come to Jesus. When in reality, the narrative of the scripture is a narrative of descent, of restoration, of God coming down to dwell with his people and not have us come up to him. And it's really about putting heaven and earth back together, which is a way bigger and better story.
We're talking with Jefferson Bethke here on the road. Jefferson is a light for Jesus across new media and a New York Times best-selling author. He's authored a brand new book out this month with a compelling title, It's Not What You Think. You took the initiative to really study and to encounter the first century world of Jesus as you wrote this, and you say that's really changed your reading of the Gospels. How so, would you say?
Yeah, well, I think when you enter the world of Jesus, you can better understand the words of Jesus because, you know, that's we miss so many things, right? So take an American example, right? Like, if I tell you, you know, 67 years ago, that immediately is going to echo Abraham Lincoln, right?
Yes, sir.
But if you're 2,000 years from now and, you know, you're studying and English doesn't exist anymore and you're just studying us as a civilization and you read 67 years ago, in your kind of elementary linguistics, you're just going to think that means an actual amount of time, because that
sure.
is what it means,
sure.
right? But there's cultural baggage with it that we know because we're in this context. And there's so much like that in the scripture where there's just kind of a weight and gravity that when you keep searching and digging, it comes more alive.
Well, you don't mess around in the beginning of the book at all, and I so enjoyed reading it. I must say, you kick it off by saying that Christianity is a bounce check to your generation. How so, would you say?
Yeah, that's a fun first sentence to a book, right? what I really mean by that is just because we're not entering into the world of Jesus and really understanding the scriptures in their fullness, what kind of has happened is the Christianity we have is very kind of like flimsy and fake and kind of, it just doesn't give life. It doesn't really give the joy and peace and healing that really, Jesus came to bring. And so a lot of my, my generation kind of tried to cash that check in. We said yes to that. And then we tried to cash that in, and it just bounced. It didn't really deliver. It didn't. We got to places where we needed it, and it didn't deliver. And so my premise of the book is, what if Christianity, though, isn't what you think? And what if what you said no to, and made you throw off Christianity wasn't even the real thing? You know, and that's kind of the premise.
How do we, and of course much of your book is about this, so I don't expect you to recite the whole book to us here, but how can we start to make better promises to the next generation about what Christianity really is?
I think, yeah, the first chapter is on story, and so I think we have to get away from a fact-based, intellectual, mental ascent Christianity. Now, of course, you know, I'm not, going against myself in the sense of, just 2 seconds ago I said we have to study and lean into the scriptures and the context. But what I mean by that is that truth always has to end on a person, and that person is Jesus. The minute we make a Christianity that's about, you know, here's the 3 facts you have to believe, and then you're a Christian, but you might not ever have an experience with the risen Lord, that's basically turning Christianity into the Industrial Revolution, right? It's saying, stamp, 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 put you down the assembly line.
Wow.
When in reality, it's about meeting another person, so we can never lose that aspect.
We're here with Jefferson Bethke on the road for Faith Radio, and I'm Ryan Thomas. I was really intrigued to ask you this question because I feel like it's a lot easier to point out the problems in our churches and in our faith than it is to move the conversation towards solutions and what we can actually do to help. And to me, that's one of the most compelling features of your ministry, and even going back to your original video. Was there a time in your faith walk, Jefferson, when you maybe turned that corner from just frustration and feeling it with what you saw around you to starting to really grapple with what we can actually do to help?
Yeah, well, I think it's always 2 sides of the same coin. We just have to make sure to never stop there. I think you can't really, you know, problems are the things that need solutions. So, yeah, I think it's fine to have those. But I think never to always realize that Christianity is a covenant community. And so you're committed, you're in, and it's always an in-house thing, right? It's always how can we continue to get better as the family of God to grow rather than, you know, kind of saying, oh, I don't need you guys anymore. Or I'm burnt out or whatever. I think we have to keep always leaning into the covenant aspect, and that usually takes us to a really good place.
That's excellent. Well said. You speak to an issue of focus for many people of faith and say that while many of us are focused on sin management, so to speak, that we ought to be more keyed in on God's restoration. So how would that look in everyday life? And you, by the way, I should say too, it's remarkable in the book how vulnerable you are about your own struggles. So just thank you for that. I mean, thank you for being so real about what you've been going through as well.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, that part really came from me. When you start your story with human sin in Genesis 3, then you're very zoomed in on the human condition, and then Jesus is nothing more than solving the human condition, which is just to manage our sin and get rid of it and take care of it. But when you start in Genesis 1 and 2, it's a way bigger picture. We're part of it, right? Humans, image bearers, are part of it. But there's the cosmos, there's heaven and earth, there's animals and trees and creation, and our sin affected all of that. So when you start there, then you realize Jesus not only restores us, but through us, he's restoring the whole world and putting heaven and earth back together. And then all the aspects that come with that, relationships, marriage, family, et cetera, it just becomes a way bigger story and a bigger gospel. And so that's what I really try to push people to is, you know, it's really about the restoration of all things, which is a way more compelling story.
You cover a lot of ground in this book, but you have some quite profound things to say about one of the most really difficult parts of our faith, which is loving our enemies. Not an easy topic, but how do Christians live that out here in America or even in Syria?
Yeah, so I talk about that in the book, and I devote a lot of time to it. And it's really, the hard part is I don't really come down on a ton of exact, here's the manual of solutions, because I really think it's something that has to be led by the Spirit creatively in the moment and in a community context. But also, we're so far on the spectrum of not even really believing that's a high value of the Christian faith that I really argue that, no, this is a non-negotiable. When you're a Jesus follower, one of the main things that makes you stand out is how you love your enemies. And that's something we have to wrestle with, right? That Jesus himself modeled that the very moment that every single person thought he was defeated was actually the moment of victory, because enemy love is upside down to the world. Enemy love is a way to change the world, but no one else is going to think it looks like a victory. And that's just how the Spirit works, and that's how upside down the nature of the cross is. And so we have to step into that. You know, Jesus offered himself as a sacrifice for others, and while people were saying, you know, hey, you know, you're the King of the Jews and you can't even save yourself, in that very moment, he had to stay on the cross to save others, right? And yeah. So it's very much this, like, very two worlds colliding on how the world sees. The world uses power and violence and coercion to change the world, and it doesn't work. Jesus uses love and sacrificial enemy love to change the world, and it does work. And so N.T. Wright, one of my favorites, says, you know, when Jesus wants to change the world, he doesn't send in the tanks. He sends in the meek and the mild, and there's a big difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jefferson Bethke is with us. Jefferson is a light for Jesus across new media and a New York Times best-selling author. He's authored a brand new book out this month with the compelling title, It's Not What You Think. And we're here on the road for Faith Radio, and I'm Ryan Thomas. And Jefferson, so kind to talk to us today in the midst of, I believe you said, Jefferson, a seven-hour block of interviews promoting your new book.
Yeah, it's a crazy day, but yeah, this has been fun because you're one of the ones that actually read the book, so that's awesome.
Well, it was a great book. It really is. I enjoyed it immensely. You talk about being wounded, the concept of being wounded as humans and followers of Christ, and you say basically we should celebrate our scars. That's another countercultural argument you're making, so what's behind that?
Yeah, well, what I talk about there is we all have wounds. We all have parts that are sensitive and hurt, and we cringe when people touch them, just like physical wounds, and we cover them up. But when you come to Jesus, he cleans you and he heals you, and then those wounds become scars. And there's a big difference there, because scars don't hurt anymore. Scars aren't sensitive, and scars tell a story. And that's what it means to tell other people about Jesus, is really look at your scars and point to them and say, look what Jesus did. This is what he can do for you. And that's really what that whole part is about.
I was also interested to read the part where you discuss the Sabbath and the whole concept of rest. And as a generation, we have more opportunities to move and to be going than really any generation ever has. So how do we practice or not practice rest differently than God intended today?
Yeah, I think with that chapter, I was really trying to get, you know, at the idol of performance and workaholism and everything in America, just the sense of we think we set the standard of the world, when in reality there's a rhythm about the cosmos that we can't change. There's a music about the world, you know, day, night, the seasons and agriculture and all these different things. There's a rhythm that is in place. And I think we think we're so autonomous that we can just buck all these trends and all this rhythm.
Yep.
But in reality, it's like it's a music that's happening. The question is, are we going to dance to it, or are we going to just dance off beat? And when you dance off beat and you're not in rhythm, you can't change the music no matter what you do, and you just kind of look foolish. And so a lot of times that's what we do, I think, with rest. We're not. It's a natural rhythm to rest, to cease, to stop, to realize we're human beings, not human doings. And if we only, you know, and if we kind of keep going against that, it'll only just kind of take us further and further away from what it means to be human.
I love that phrase, human beings, not human doings. We're talking with Jefferson Bethke today on the road for Faith Radio. And Jefferson's new book is called It's Not What You Think. He's a New York Times best-selling author. Now, you talk a lot about relationships in the book as well. You and your wife, Alyssa, get asked a lot of questions about dating and marriage. What is the best piece of advice, or a few of the best pieces of advice you have for those who are in that realm of life and for dating?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to intentionality. I really encourage people who are dating and entering into relationships to set a vision and set goals and make those clear, because you want to be on the same page. And, you know, I'm not hyper-spiritualizing it in the sense of, you know, propose on the first date, but I think, because I think sometimes Christian subculture can go way too far on that side of thing.
Sure.
But what I am saying is just to really understand that, you know, there should be a vision and there should be a goal, and you want to find someone who has that same thing. And so when you do that, that's really where a lot of peace and joy comes from.
One of the remarkable things that I really picked up on in your book is how vulnerable you are about your own mistakes. And you talk about how far you've come, really, even when it comes to relationships. But why were you so – how does it feel to be that vulnerable, I guess, is a question that I'd ask you. I mean, you tell some stories in there which must have been hard to tell, but why did you feel that was so necessary to do?
Yeah, with each book I've written so far and even some of my videos, I basically – want to just be on. It's basically the scar thing again. I want to, you know, show the place where I found healing, and even though it might be hard or awkward or whatever, and really just say, hey, you know, when we're not, I'm not my own standing, and Jesus represents me and represents us when you're in him, and so we can have that faith and that courage to really be as vulnerable as possible.
You asked this question in your book, quote, would we rather have Jesus give us all the answers, or would we rather sit at the table with him, end quote. Tell us how you came to arrive at even asking that question.
Yeah, I think with that one, a lot of times our Christianity is just give me all the right facts, give me all the things I need to know, and then I'm good to go. When in reality, we don't realize that a lot of times we're seeing that so that we don't need Jesus anymore. Like, give me all the stuff so I don't need to lean on him anymore. When the scriptures is all about intimacy and dependency, and it's really about sitting at the table with him and knowing him. And those are two different things. One is, give me all the stuff so I can leave. And one says, I don't really care about the stuff. I just want to know you and sit with you. And that's where kind of the revelation or the stuff per se comes from. And so that's where I kind of talk about with that.
Understood. That is the voice of Jefferson Bethke. Jefferson, A Light for Jesus Across New Media, and a New York Times bestselling author. The newest book is called It's Not What You Think, a compelling title, and the book is out just this very month here as we talk on the road with Jefferson. And you mention a good bit about your elementary school friend Big Mike and the difference that he made in your life. How does Big Mike remind you of your true identity in Christ?
Yeah, that was a fun story. And so when I was growing up, I had, you know, I was tiny and scrawny and kind of a troublemaker. And so I would just do stupid stuff. But I had this really big friend named Mike. And, you know, like he basically went through puberty when he was five. You know, facial hair and he's like third grade and really large guy. And so when I would do stupid stuff, I knew I had to start running because I was really small and I knew that I couldn't hold my own. But I didn't have to run forever. I just had to run far enough to basically get to Mike. Because the minute I did that, their whole demeanor changed, right? The people chasing me stopped. They were scared now. They didn't really engage me anymore, and they stopped chasing me. And why? Because not because of me, but because of who I was with now and who I was standing with. And so I just use that as an example of us with Jesus, that, you know, Satan, sin, and death are not scared of us, and in ourselves, we can't really do much against them. But what we can do is go stand at the feet of Jesus, point our finger to him, and say, he wins, he's righteous, he's our advocate, and he's our standing. And then that's when they are terrified because they know they've already been defeated.
Absolutely. Understood. Well, our time is quickly waning here with Jefferson Bethke, but one of the things that I picked up on going through the book was a story you told, and you were a very good baseball player. Is that fair to say? Can you own that?
I mean, I played, all the way through college, so I guess enough to do that. It was definitely fun to play.
The part of your baseball story, you talk about an injury that you sustained and what that injury, what God used to teach you through that injury. Could you share that story and sort of speak to that a bit?
Yeah, well, anytime someone has something that really is central to their life, like which baseball was, when you play that competitively, it was like my whole life, right? All time and energy and 5 days a week, practice and training. And so it became my life be kind of orbited around that or centered around that. And so when I got injured, I felt like I lost everything. I kind of lost my center. And that's because whatever you put at the center, that really is your functional God. So I just make sure to encourage people, like, God's the only one that can sustain being God. He's the only one that really was meant to be at that center.
Yeah.
He's the only one that we are meant to lean in on. And everything else can be taken or can be shaken. And that's why it's a really bad place to put your identity.
Well said. Well said, sir. Well, the last question I think I just wanted to ask you was, one of the most common discussions, I think, among Christians is how faith seems to have lost so much relevance in our culture. And I was especially curious to ask you, as somebody who's actually been able to really find a voice. We talked about the 30 million views on your first video, and I believe over 60 million views for your YouTube channel. But as somebody who's actually found a voice there, what insight have you gained on how we can find a voice as people of faith in media, especially?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to, again, like what you mentioned earlier, just being vulnerable, because I think that's what people, you know, we have such a hurt and broken world, and that's really what people are looking for, is just to understand that there's healing, but they're also not alone. And so when you can show that and not just kind of be in your ivory tower, that's when I think a lot of times people can really connect and relate.
The book is called It's Not What You Think, Why Christianity is About So Much More Than Going to Heaven When You Die, by Jefferson Bethke. And Jefferson, if people, for some whatever reason, could only take one thing away from picking up your book and reading through it, what would you have them leave it with?
I think definitely just the fact that the kingdom is just, it's here now, and you can really relate to that, and that it really is something that you can step under right in this moment, and not something you have to wait for.
Okay, brother. And if people want to go out there and grab the book, or if they want to learn more about you, because I know you're all over social media, talk about some of the best places they can find you.
Yeah, so my website's jeffbethke.com. My last name is spelled B-E-T-H-K-E. And then Jefferson Bethke is on my social media, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and all that.
All right, brother. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today, and we really wish you the best with the new book.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.